Menkää keikoille, hyvät ihmiset. Tämä on Kasarin lapset podcast. Yhteistyössä Teemu Aalto Music Productions, Skippers Amps ja lehmusroasteri.com.
Tässä Kasarilapset podcastin jaksossa vieraana on itse Marty Friedman, jolta on tulossa soololevy Drama, mutta joka tunnetaan myös töistään Jason Beckerin kanssa soolona sekä vuosistaan totta kai Megadethissä. Marty kanssa puhutaan vähän siitä, että mitä kuuluu kitarasoitolle, millainen tuo uusi levy on, niin miten hän muistelee noita uransa vuosia. Mun nimi on Vesa Winberg, tämä on Kasarilapset podcast. Tervetuloa matkaan mukaan. Ja niin paljon oli taas asiaa, että meillä olisi puheet mennä pitkäksi. Tämä podcast paahdetaan kasaan tuttuun tapaan yhteistyössä Suomen päräyttävimmän paahtimon Lehmusroasterin kanssa www.lehmusroasteri.com. Sinne koodi Rock and Roll Never Dies 15% alennusta kahvikaakaan T-tilauksista. Sen lisäksi Teemu Aalto Music Productions, Skippers Amps ja Dark River Festival. Mä muistan ne vuodet, kun elettiin niitä herkimpiä teiniä vuosia ja oltiin alttiita kaikennäköisille vaikutteille musiikissa. Ja nimenomaan vaikutteille, niitä imettiin joka paikassa. On hämmästyttävää jälkeenpäin muistella, että miten paljon kuitenkin sitä musiikkia omaan laariin tarttui kuunneltavaksi, ottaen huomioon, että meillä ei ollut internettiä, Spotifyta, suoratoistoja siinä mielessä, kuten nykyään on. Nykyään kaikki saadaan kuunneltavaksi todella helposti. Tämä on itsestäänselvyys, mutta minkä takia tätä haluan alleviivata on se, että se oli hämmästyttävää, miten paljon noita levyjä alkoi sitten vaan virrata omalle soittimelle, tai C-kassuinahan niitä itse asiassa paljon tuli. Mä muistan, kun varhaisemmalla kasarilla hyvin junnuna Eddie Van Halen tuli tutuksi. Sitten tuli Richie Blackmore, tuli erilaiset kitaristit. Mutta sitten kun alkoi tulla hivenen nuoremman polven kitaristeja, niin mä muistan, että miten jotenkin vaan hyvältä se tuntui. Mä oon suomalaisen musan puolella puhunut samasta ilmiöstä liittyen Stoneen. Et silloin kun Stone tuli, niin se loi meille nuorille heavypettereille helvetistä toivoa, ikään kuin samaistumispintaa, että hei, jos noin meitä vähän vanhemmat kykenevät ton tekemään, niin kykenemme mekin. Sama ilmiö alkoi tapahtua 80-luvun puolenvälin jälkeen, kun Pohjois-Amerikasta alkoi tulla, hyvä muuten lisäksi Pohjois-Amerikasta, niin kuin Etelä-Amerikasta olisi hirveästi tullut näitä kitaristeja. Jenkeistä alkoi tulvia kitaristeja, jotka soittivat toisenlaisella uudenlaisella tatsilla. Ensimmäisiä, joka tuli, oli jossain, olikohan se nyt Rockradion raskaan musiikin illassa. Muistan, kun juontaja sanoi, että mitä hän mahtavat laittaa jenkeissä siihen aamukahviin tai aamumuroihin, kun nämä nykykitaristit soittavat niin lujaa. Tällöin, ja nopeasti, tällöin puhuttiin Vinnie Moresta, jonka levy Mind's Eye, joka on muuten aivan loistava levy, fiilislevy, tuli julki. Mutta sitä alkoi tulla muutakin. Cacophony. Helvetin vaikea nimi, Cacophony Duo nimittäin teki sit vaikutuksen. Jostain tuli eteen, oliko puhe tai video jopa siitä, että siellä on kitaristi, joka jojottelee samaan aikaan, kun soittaa. Tai nyt saattaa muistikuvat mennä heittää häräpyllyä, toi tullut myöhemmin. Mutta yhtä kaikki tuli nuori duo, joka teki kitaralla ihan mitä sattuu ja ihan mitä haluaa. Silloin otettiin kaikennäköiset Guitar Worldit, Guitar Playerit haltuun, ja siellä oli näitä kuvia. Ja mä muistan, kun tämä kaksikko, Jason Becker ja Marty Friedman, oli kuvassa karvin kitaroillaan. Martylla oli vähän tommonen sakarakitara, ehkä pikkasen enemmän, ja sitten Jason Beckerillä oli karvin, oli tommonen itse superstrato-tyylinen. Ja nämä kaverit olivat nuoria, ja nämä mullistivat kitaran soiton. Sitten tämä duo hajosi, tiedetään mitä Jason Beckerille kävi, valitettava ALS-sairaus tuli, ja se on traagista, mitä tapahtui David Lee Rothin kanssa, kun äänitettiin Little Enough-albumia. Mutta Jason Becker pulpahti sitten esille Megadethin riveissä, ja hänen uransa on sen jälkeen ollut todella uraauurtava, mitä tulee kitaran soittoon ja millaisilla levyillä hän on ollut mukana. Nyt itse asiassa meillä on mahdollisuus hetkeksi istahtaa Martin kanssa alas, nimittäin Marty otti aikaa, ja hänen kanssaan tuli puhetta tuosta uudesta albumista, mutta sitten tuli myös vuosista Megadethissä ja myös Jason Beckerista. Joten Marty Friedman, tervetuloa Kasarilapset podcastiin. Like I said, Marty Friedman, it's an honor to have you on Kasarilapset podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
You have an upcoming album coming out, Drama, and it sounds fantastic. How do you feel about that album? It's very harmonious, very full-sounding album.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a very orchestral album. Definitely not my most heavy metal album of all time, but it's kind of a romantic side of my playing. It's very uplifting, very feel-good type of music, but it's also very dense with a lot of very deep arrangements, and hopefully there's a lot of moments that you'll enjoy when you listen to it.
How do you mix like heavy guitar parts and very like uplifting melodies that you have mixed on that album? It's very like uplifting music. I've listened to it a couple of times.
Thank you very much. Well, my guitar sound, for the most part, is, you know, it's a very basic heavy metal lead guitar sound. But it's the arrangements and the types of melodies and the types of melodic motifs that I'm playing with that sound that make it feel kind of uplifting, because it's not a very heavy metal format. I don't really know how to describe the music in words. The closest thing would be, I had an album called Scenes a long time ago, and it was very much the opposite of my aggressive music sound, but it still was definitely a big part of my music. And this is kind of like a much more modern, much more 2020s version of that. And but the sound of my guitar itself, it's a heavy metal sound that we're very accustomed to listening to.
Yeah, that's true. Am I correct? Is there a few very cool sounding Brian May-ish like moments on your lead playing? There's you can tell it's Marty Friedman playing, but there's a couple of parts in a couple of songs that it's very like it reminded me of a little bit of Brian May. Am I totally off the track?
No, that's a compliment. He's one of my favorite guitar players of all time, and there's no doubt that I've stolen things from him. I'm not ashamed to say it. His melodic sense is similar to mine sometimes. And so if I hear that, I'm not very surprised about that.
Okay, that's cool to hear. And a couple of songs like the song Prayer. You know, when I grew up with guitar, Shadows and Hank Marvin was some kind of influence to me. And Prayer, the beginning of the song Prayer, there was a little bit like the Shadows, the clean sounding moments. So it's a very cool sounding mixture, the whole album, Marty.
Thank you. You don't look that old, though.
No. It was my father's album.
Yeah, I figured that. Yeah, I mean, tonally, it's all over the place. I used a lot of very rich, clean tones on this record, and a lot of analog type of recording process and analog sounds. So, sonically, it may be simpler. It may be similar to what you're talking about. Content-wise, I think it's very different, but sonically, yeah.
Yeah. How do you compose? What's the beginning of the song when you start making those tracks or compositions?
The very beginning is always with a melody that I would record and I will revisit later. And when I revisit it, if it still seems interesting to me, the parts just kind of take on their own lives. You know, if I like a melody, then it kind of leads me to the next part.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, work on a couple parts and put it away. And a lot of my stuff, the way it works is with living with it. living with these things for a long time, because sometimes you get really excited about something you're doing because it's new, and then you finish it and you're like, wow, that's great. But then it, like 5-6 months later, it doesn't last. You know what I mean? It doesn't stick with you. You kept it because of the initial excitement. And I learned over my last maybe 5 or 6 albums that if you make the process really long, you have enough time to get sick of things.
Yeah.
And when you get sick of these things, you throw them away. But the things that you keep being excited about months and months later and you keep adding to, those are the ones that wind up making stronger songs on the album.
There's a lot of like a commercial potential on this album. For example, when I listened to it, there are like a lot of like it's a very like a wide range of songs, but there's also like a radio friendly songs on this album. How do you feel about that? For example, Dead of Winter, for example, or.
Right, that's the one. That's the one that I would say that's radio friendly. All the other songs are instrumentals.
Yeah.
And instrumentals, although they're not necessarily radio friendly, there's a lot of other applications for instrumentals, like movies, game music, television. There's just a million other places for instrumental music, but Dead of Winter is the one song with vocals. And like you said before, it's uplifting. And the lyrics are very uplifting. And I'm not very much of a message type of guy with lyrics, but I really wanted to do something that young people could feel uplifted about. Because I feel like that a lot of young people got kind of a raw end of the deal, you know, with like the pandemic taking like 3 years out of their teenage years of school, which were supposed to be the funnest thing. So I think they have a really hard time of things. And I just want them to know, maybe like from a person, a generation above them, that, you know, you'll get over it and things will get better. And I just want to be a positive influence, because I just feel really kind of guilty, because as a kid, those were the best years, and like I can't imagine having to stay home for that now, how that would really affect you mentally for the next few years. So that's kind of what the lyrics of Dead of Winter are sort of about, but the whole entire concept is to be like an uplifting existence, you know, just to, like, if they listen to anything on the record, hopefully you feel better, and it's kind of a healing type of thing done with a guitar, you know. Hopefully that's how people will enjoy it.
Yeah, I totally buy it. Marty, how would you describe the status of electric guitar in 2024? There's a lot of changes in music, but how do you see the status of guitar as an institution, if you know what I mean?
I think guitar, the reason why the guitar will never completely die is because it's just so damn fun to play. You know what I mean? Yeah. All kinds of musical trends go in and out with a lot of stuff being done with AI and inside the box and computerized and synthesizers and all that stuff and auto-tuning and all that. And that's all fine. But what those things don't offer is like getting sweaty and playing with this thing where you can see the actual progress and feel it. And it's a very touch oriented thing, and you can really touch the melodies and touch the rhythm and feel the excitement. So that's never going to go away. And especially with YouTube and other social media, people can share, you know, guitar tips and lessons and how to play things and argue with each other all across the world. And that's another fun thing about guitars, that it's just never going to go away. But it takes a different form. You know, in Japanese music, guitar has a very big presence in pop music. However, in American music and I don't know about Finland. I know Finland is a very guitar-friendly country as a country.
Yeah.
But as for the top 10 in the mainstream, I would be surprised if there's a lot of guitar in there. So really all it takes is just another interesting collaboration to bring guitar back on the charts. But still, even when the guitar is not in the charts, I think it's going to continue to be a popular thing for fun and to write music on. And I don't think it's in any danger of extinction.
I'm relieved to hear that. Marty, how do you remember those crazy years in the 80s when the younger generation of guitar players like yourself and Jason Becker and, for example, Vinnie Moore and a bit before you, Yngwie Malmsteen, you like came up with a totally new approach to guitar. Of course, there was Eddie Van Halen and likes before, but I remember when I first heard you and Jason play, we were like totally blown off, and you were the young guys to us. How do you remember those crazy years?
Oh, well, you know, we were just trying to do, speaking for myself and Jason, I can't really speak for the other guys, but we were just trying to make the music that we wanted people to identify us with and represent us. And we were just like two guys having fun, friendly competition, always trying to up our games with each other. And we were just very lucky that any record label was willing to put it out because it was so uncommercial at the time. It had no reason to be released. It was so uncommercial. And so we were very fortunate. And I see you've got the record back there, which is cool.
Yeah.
We were very fortunate. Because, it was that kind of playing was never in vogue. But it's funny with those albums, every 5-10 years, you know, people rediscover those things that we did back when we were teenagers and stuff. And so it's kind of a very happy, lucky thing that people have enjoyed what we were doing. But we would have done it for nothing anyway. We're just two kids having fun.
Yeah, but you were big role models, and, you know, you set the bar pretty high that you got us all rehearsing, and you gave us, like, hope that also the younger generation guys can, you know, like, shred. But talking about shredding, you've said that you don't want to consider yourself as a shredder anymore. Are you relieved that you don't have to, like, prove yourself that how fast you are, because everybody knows how fast you are as a player?
I don't like that you said anymore, because I was never a shredder before.
Okay, let's take that back. Yeah.
But this is, you got to remember, this is the same guy. We're talking about cacophony. There's all kinds of, like, crazy fast stuff that's too fast, too meaningless. I mean, most of that stuff is great. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So but I know that people are saying, this guy's a hypocrite, because listen to that cacophony stuff. If that's not shredding, I don't know what is. But so I think even back then, we were very, very concerned with making the content musical and not just showing how fast we could play, because but people will listen to music in different ways, and we cannot control what people think. I just don't like that term, because it reminds me of, like, when you're a kid, there's always someone in the basement who plays so incredibly fast.
Yeah.
And you look at his fingers and it's like, oh my God. But then if you turn around and don't watch and just use your ears, it's like, it sounds like shit. and I just didn't want to be connected with that, but I understand it. Yeah. And when people say it, I'm not insulted by it, because I know people mean well, but, like, it just reminds me of teenage years in the basement.
Yeah.
You know, there's always neighborhood kids like that, you know?
Yeah, I totally understand. How do you remember your years in Megadeth? Because those albums that you played on, starting from Rust in Peace, those are epic metal albums in every sense, and they've stood the test of time pretty well. How do you remember those? How do you, like, now listen to your own playing on those Megadeth albums?
I don't go back to listen to those albums, and I really don't go back to listen to my own solo albums that much, except when preparing for a tour and choosing a set list and relearning the songs. So I haven't really listened to those old Megadeth songs with new ears in quite some time, but, people still enjoy it. And so, like Cacophony, I'm just very thrilled that people are still enjoying that stuff years later. And I knew at the time it was great because, you know, we all enjoyed it and we all were just really focused. And it was a, you know, it wasn't luck that, you know, the music we made was not made by luck. It was very, very worked out and very, very well rehearsed and well thought out. So it's something that I think all of us in the band can be proud of. And I'm just really glad that the band continues to rock on and do really well. And I'm their biggest fan.
Yeah, there's a new guitar player, Teemu Mäntysaari, actually from Finland. Is he familiar to you? Do you know the player, Teemu?
I met him once. I met him at Wacken when I guested with Megadeth there. Didn't hear him play, but you know, I'm sure he's really, really super because I know that Kiko recommended him, and if he's in the band, then he must be really, really something special. So wish him nothing but absolutely the best luck, and it's going to be a great ride for him, I'm sure.
A couple of more questions, and already at this point, Marty, I'm really, really thank you for sharing this time with this podcast. But what was it like to work and create music with Dave Mustaine? How would you describe it now, working and creating new metal and music?
The only reason I have a good answer for this is because I've been working on an autobiography that's going to come out at the end of this year. So in that, every single detail of not only my Megadeth years, but the Cacophony years, Hawaii, Deuce, all of my entire band life and private life has gone into so much intense details that it was really like a big thing to pull up these old memories and stuff and get it all down correctly. But thank God I was never really into drugs. So it's all still in there.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's all in there. But, yeah, I mean, the thing about the way Dave and I made music that was cool was that we did everything different. It wasn't like two guys doing the same thing and one guy was better at that thing than the other. It was two guys doing completely different things. And on the occasions that they blended together, it was really like a nice blending thing that you can't practice that. It's just kind of, you get lucky with combinations. And so sometimes, you know, when he plays a rhythm and I play a solo, it's just like, how can these two things be in the same song?
Yeah.
And I think that's how you can't prepare for that. You know, you just get lucky with that type of thing.
That sounded really, really nice. And I can understand what you're meaning. I must ask you about Jason Becker, because the first that I got to know you guys was for Cacophony. Albums. What's your thoughts on Jason? Because like you, but also Jason was a really great inspiration for us and my generation of guitar players. What's your thoughts on Jason?
Well, he is not only a fantastic genius musician, but he is my complete inspiration to wake up in the morning and work. He's, you know, everything I do is because I want to play it for him and get his approval on it and see what he thinks. So he's always like in my mind, you know, what's Jason going to think when he hears this? You know, it's not that often that you find a person in your life who can appreciate and understand some of these tiny, tiny little things that only that person can understand. You know, I played in my band with a lot of different guitarists, and when we worked together for years, of course, at that point, we understand each other's nuances. But Jason and I were together when we discovered all of these nuances in the first place. So sometimes, you know, I've really got him in my mind a lot more than people might think, because I'm always looking forward to finishing something and playing it to him.
Do you still send like files to Jason when you finish up something that you've done?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That if I'm really, really pleased with it, you know, I don't want to blow up his email with everything, but like sometimes, you know, dude, you got to hear this one, you know, and such an inspiration because the music he creates without even the ability to hold the instrument is just so deep and beautiful and musical. So it just gives me so much inspiration, and he's just my number one.
What was Jason's comment, if I dare to ask, what was Jason's comment on drama? Because it's uplifting music, it's beautiful music. How did Jason comment?
I haven't played it for him yet. Can you believe that? It's not coming out. It's coming out in May, and I'm kind of deciding whether if I want him to hear the whole thing or hear one song first, or I don't know. I haven't played it for him yet. Kind of nervous, man, because you know I want to make a good impression, but I'm very, very proud of the record, so I hope he'll like it, but I'm going to play it for him soon, I'm sure.
But Marty, I must tell you that when I listened to it, your new album a couple of times, Jason came to my mind when I listened to the very positive and uplifting, beautiful melodies. Jason was the person that came to my mind instantly. I couldn't help it.
Ah, oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'll tell him that because I'll tell him that before he listens to it. And he'll listen to it with a good ear.
Marty, I really thank sharing your valuable time with the Kasarilapset podcast. When or are we going to see you on tour with your new material? Because, like I said, it sounds very positive and very like I said many times, uplifting and beautiful.
Thank you very much. I'm playing some shows in Asia and in some Japan, and we're working on a world tour, kind of debating whether to do it later this year or early next year, or, you know, a lot of offers, but just a lot of things going on in Japan that I have to tend to, having to do with the drama record, and just kind of trying to work out the best possible touring scenario. But what you can be sure of is that I will be touring in Europe and everywhere. There's no rush for it, for my touring, but touring is my absolute favorite thing. So I'm definitely going to be touring for this album.
Okay. That's,
I guess, just watch my social media.
Yeah, I will follow you, and everybody, my podcast listeners will. You're in Japan. Is it spring over there, or what does it look like outside when you look outside the window?
It's spring. It's spring. It's actually the cherry blossom season, which is very short and very representative of a special season of Japan. It's only like a couple weeks long, and so you try to get out and see some of the cherry blossoms if you can. But unfortunately, I'm in the studio much of the time. But it's a nice time to be in Japan. It's probably the best time of the year.
Näin totesi Marty Friedman, ja ei voi muuta kuin todeta, että oli upeaa saada hänet haastatteluun, ja kiitokset myös Koutosen Kasperille tämän järjestämisestä. Tässä oli tämänkertainen Kasarilapset-podcastin jakso. Mun nimi on Vesa Winberg. Palataan astialle. Moro!